Hey, yo, and here we go. It is episode 106 of We Talk Comics. It's Scriptman's 2, but no one would put a 2 on anything these days. So is it Scriptman's 1 rebooted? What do we want to call this one?
The new Scriptman's.
All new
Scriptman's returns.
Scriptman's lives.
The Scriptman's
revenge initiative? Of the Scriptman's.
The Scriptman's initiative.
The Scriptman's initiative.
Well, the Scriptman's imperative.
Ultimatum. The Scriptman's ultimatum.
Oh, that's what it is. It's Ultimate Scriptman's.
Ultimate Scriptman's. Excellent.
Ultimate Scriptman's. All right. I am Keith hosting this week, and I am joined by regular co-hosts, Chris. Say hi, Chris.
Ayo, I'm here, paying attention to everything.
And this week we have alumni, Brett.
Alumni, that makes me feel so important.
Founder, what do they call that in university? You're a host emeritus.
Host emeritus. Well, that's even better, man. I need to
tell permanent host. No, whether you're on it or not, you are still a permanent host. Yeah.
I'll put that on the business card too. Host emeritus.
How have you been? You've been doing some great interviews lately, Brett, for the website.
Well, we're trying to get stuff loaded up. We've been holding back a little bit because we're trying to set up stuff for the expo specifically, and so that's why interview somebody 2 weeks in advance when we're just going to be able to see them live at the expo.
That's right. We are only a couple of weeks away now from the Calgary Comic and Entertainment Expo. The CCEE.
Yeah, not to be confused with the C2E2, you know, CCEE.
So it's coming up, and we are having a live episode recorded at the Calgary Expo. It's on the Saturday at 4:45 in the Palomino Room E. I think it's E as a number. It'll be in the guide anyway.
Yes, it is in E. Is in fact both of the panels that I will be attached to are in E.
Yes, we as well as we are doing a live episode with special guests Scott Kowalczyk, Ed Brisson, Ben Rankle, and Riley Rossmo. Brett, Chris, and I will also be there. We're loading up. It's going to be a fun 45 minutes. And bringing you all of the adventure of We Talk Comics, where you get to see us, and you know, we'll do autographs after. We'll have to do those in the foyer.
In the foyer.
In the foyer. And Brett, you're also hosting a panel. When is that, and what is it?
Let's see now. I'm going to need to move on here to find the information. So talk amongst yourselves for a second.
Well, I'm. I haven't confirmed, but I am in talks to host a second panel myself. I'll let you know that. Check on my Twitter, Cub Reporter K, later on. Hopefully, the details will come together prior to the expo. I'd rather they didn't come together after the expo. So still negotiating, but it sounds like we'll have a good presence for We Talk Comics at the expo. All four of us will be there. I believe all 4 days.
I do believe so.
We'll have to do some, as well as the panel, we'll have to do some meetups and meet our adoring fans. We will not be tabling. We have no products to sell, so hard to justify the table.
Yes, but we'll have a few things to give away. And I have the panel information now.
All right.
So it's penciled in for Sunday from 1 to 1:45 p.m. in the Palomino Room E. And it is called It's Never Been Easier to Get a Comic Together, But Is It a Route to a Career or Business? Alexander Finbow from Renegade Arts Entertainment, Connor McCreary from Kill Shakespeare, and Greg Komachuk of Alchemical Press discuss their experiences in comic books publishing, work for hire, creator-owned, or self-published. Moderated by Brett Monroe from We Talk Comics.
Fantastic.
So Sunday, 1 to 1:45.
And I am,
wow, that actually sounds like something I might want to attend.
I think it'll be a lot of fun.
Brett will also be there.
Yes, I will. I had intended to show up. Yeah.
I'm going to make sure that I make it right to that panel, and I have to run right after it to make a plane to go to Vegas for a few days to relax after the expo. I'm going to go to Vegas for 4 days.
Well, you'll need it.
That's how I recover from an expo now.
Yeah, so, you get liquored up and gamble.
I will, of course, still make time to sign autographs after that panel as well. We'll be there. It's Brett's moment to shine, but you know, again, in the foyer.
In the foyer, we'll be there, yes, too. We'll be.
We'll hand out some free swag and autograph whatever you want us to autograph, pretty much.
Yes, you know, breasts and such. Yes.
Well, I mean, again, like you know, time and wherewithal permitting. Not necessarily. Not every breast at the comic expo would be worth signing.
Yeah, that's fair. Totally fair.
All right. Well, we are going to be joined in progress by also founding host Mo. He's running a little late, so we're going to do a little bit of news before Mo gets here. We'll start with two smaller stories, but interesting stories for where it for the new marker for DC. DC is starting to tease some of its July books, and for the first time since the New 52, they will be relaunching titles. They have not up to now canceled the book to restart it. They will be relaunching Teen Titans in July by Will Pfeiffer and Kenneth Rocafort. This team is made up of Red Robin, Wonder Girl, Beast Boy, Bunker, and Raven. And they'll also be relaunching Suicide Squad. The cover image that's been released has Joker's daughter, Harley Quinn, Deathstroke, Black Manta, and Deadshot, as well as Amanda Waller, but it's not determined yet which of those characters will be members and which ones are only in for an issue or two.
It's kind of exciting. I always felt that a Suicide Squad sort of did get lost in the New 52 launch. There was a lot going on, and I don't know. I stopped paying attention. I'm kind of glad to have a nice new number one to start off, and maybe I'll go back and actually collect some of the issues from Volume 1.
There are some really good issues. It suffered from some stop and start. Alice Codd did two issues, but it really had a good run during Forever Evil. A lot of that Patrick Zercher art was really cool. The storyline that's been going through Forever Evil has been quite enjoyable. So yes, it's the first time that they'll be dipping into and they are calling them the New Suicide Squad and the New Teen Titans.
Well, there you go. At least the New Teen Titans got some history.
We'll see if it may just be Teen Titans, might be New Teen Titans, but Marvel wasn't able to trademark that new. apparently, you can't trademark the word new.
No, I believe Scope has the new Scope has the patent on that.
Yeah, New Coke has it, but they don't want it.
Yeah. They kept it for a while, but they're just not enforcing.
All right, and of course, the big news that if you're on Twitter, you may have happened upon.
And if you didn't, then you obviously don't follow anybody.
you may follow only people who talk about wrestling. Archie Comics has announced that their book, Life with Archie, will have a big event coming up in number 36, The Death of Archie. All right, my challenge to you, Brett and Chris, best jokes about Death of Archie.
Well, it would be a nice jump on point for Afterlife with Archie.
Oh yeah, good.
Oh well, geez, I wasn't prepared for that. I was only prepared to talk about the covers. The covers are actually the covers make me want to buy more Archie comics than I've bought in two decades. You know.
You know, my first thought was, will the collected volume have all the covers? Because there's some great ones there.
Oh, the Fiona Staples cover on 36 is awesome.
Yeah, we got a Frank Avile cover. We've got Mike Allred cover.
Well, because the covers are split between the 36 and 37, and so like 37 has the Alex Ross cover, which is of course killer as well. Although one thing I noticed about it is that they don't really have nostrils.
It's damn creepy. It has those sad eyes in it.
Well,
Jughead's like right, really scary in the Alex Ross. And quite frankly, I don't want to be woken up by nightmares of Jughead. That's even more disturbing than my regular dreams.
My therapist was finally able to get those to stop, and I don't want to restart. Let's not go back down that road. I'm going to go with can't wait for Reggie to take over Archie's body in the Superior Archie.
Very good, very good.
Best one I saw that I will not take credit for was the introduction of Archie as a teenager, Cyborg Archie, Archie in a armor, and Alien Archie, leading up to, of course, the return of Archie crossover.
I'm actually really I've been wanting to jump into these Life with Archies. Now that it's over, I could probably find a couple trades in a couple months. It's going to be fun.
I think there's an oversized trade that does. Like, I think they did them 10 issues at a time or something like that. They're larger.
Well, they are larger books. I mean, I think they're released in two versions, perhaps.
Okay.
But yeah, 36 and 37 is going to be the last issues, I believe.
No, I don't think so. I think they are carrying it on.
Without Archie?
Yeah. I thought that they were intending on keeping it going. Because otherwise, you know, sure, it's a big event, but, you know.
No, it will conclude the Life with Archie comic series.
Oh, okay.
It's funny. This came up at the lunch table at work, and
you know, I didn't know something if all the old folks are talking.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And what was actually harder to explain was, I mean, I might as well have had exactly the same conversation I had as when they killed Ultimate Spider-Man. So like, oh, they killed Spider-Man. The end of Spider-Man. Like, well, see, there's these two universes. And so I had to basically do that again. But then actually it bogged down in this conversation about why Archie was still in high school. And, you know, back in my day, Archie was in high school. I'm like, yeah, well, Archie doesn't have to grow up. I mean, when you go to the grocery store, Archie will still be in high school. That will not change. Archie's going to be in high school every day as long as there are comics.
Man, that right there is scarier than Archie, the undead Archie.
That's right. He went from taking computer classes on a Commodore 64 to having a tablet in class. He'll be taking a flying car. He'll still be in high school. And the only oddity will be that he's still hanging around a soda shop, which hasn't existed already in about 40 years.
Yeah. Although Archie on a cell phone still freaks me out.
That is a bit weird.
I remember as a kid reading Archie, I'm just wondering what the hell a jalopy was. Because his car made no sense whatsoever.
Actually, I'd like to know. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead. I wasn't saying anything. I can't even remember anymore.
I'd like to know how many universes Archie does have. I think Archie is just like Marvel. You know, it's like this is the 616 universe. Like, because you got the Life with Archie universe, you got the Afterlife with Archie universe, you've got the regular universe and the digest style universe, you've got the comic book universe that where he actually had like a different car for a little while and they did different stories.
Is Archie just rebooted every month? Like, is that?
I actually think Archie's rebooted like 10 times an issue.
Just every 8 pages, it's rebooted.
Yeah,
and don't forget Blackheart or Bleeding Heart Archie, where they're all superheroes. I love that
Captain
one.
Hero stuff. Yes,
Captain Hero. Oh, yeah, Captain Hero.
And of course, you've got Lil Archie. If that actually ties, like, which universe that ties into?
Yeah, that's like a JSA Justice League kind of thing.
Yeah.
Keith, your mission, if you choose to accept it, is to read all the Archies you can, enlist the Comicosity people for help, and write down all the time references.
Let's get Team Timeline back together.
Yes.
to put all of the Archies in order.
Yeah, that's what I want to see, the chronological history of Archie Comics.
That does sound fun.
So, Keith, I guess we won't be seeing you for the next 20 years. You'll have to quit your job, but that's okay, because at least we pay really well.
I bet you I can get a PhD out of it in the end. The great unified theory of Archie Andrews.
Actually, yeah, I bet you could get a PhD out of it. Awesome. That doesn't seem like a waste of time at all.
Oh, God, you'd have to watch the cartoon, man. Filmation, man. That's painful stuff.
I'm going to already say that's not canon. That's apocryphal. and that is also the news.
Awesome. Well, why don't we do a couple of wee views while we're still waiting for Mo? Hell, at this rate, we're just going to be doing a random show.
All right. Well, let's do some wee views, Brett. Because when we do wee views, what do?
Here I come to save the day.
We are saving you from bad comics.
All right. Well, we were not really prepped to do wee views this week, but we did. As it turns out, we did still read comics.
Amazing that.
So, I think we all read.
We all read.
That's everything. Now will be a reference to Mike. we all of us, collectively and individually, read Iron Fist, The Living Weapon, number one from. From All New Marvel Now. This book, if I can find the darn credits, wherever they hid the credits on this book.
Kari Andrews?
Yeah, that's the only name on this book.
There you go.
It's the one I remember.
Writer and artist. It is.
I was being quite serious about that.
Yeah. Joe Caramanga on lettering, and Kari Andrews also on cover.
All right, then.
And this is, I haven't read an Iron Fist in quite a while. I tried the Brubaker Fraction. I liked when it felt Brubaker, and I stopped when it felt Fraction. It was a pretty book, but I couldn't read it. This is a really beautiful book. It is a retelling of, Iron Fist's origin, but fits into present continuity. If you're not familiar with the character, you get everything you need. It's just really, but it's a really pretty, well-designed book. There's, he's done things with some with texturing in the flashbacks that is really clever. All right. We're back after, we almost need entrance music for you, Mo. Well, welcome to the show. Good to have you here.
I request Voodoo Child by Jimi Hendrix.
Bull in a China Shop.
I don't know Bull in a China Shop by Jimi Hendrix.
But can you hum a few bars? Yeah.
All right. I'm just going to finish talking about Iron Fist really quickly and pass this along so we can get into the main meat of the show. I really enjoy this book. I was a little cynical going into it, but I think it's pretty. I think it's a good introduction to the character. I will bug our pal Reese Marino by saying this is an excellent jump on point for the character. And I think I'm in to try this book for a little while, certainly as long as the art stays of this quality. Who wants to go next?
I'll just jump in. I have to agree. I really dug this book. Usually I'm a little bit hesitant to jump on a book when an artist is taking over the writing duties as well. But for primarily visually orientated person, there's a lot of dialogue in this book. I was impressed. There was a lot of story. It wasn't a quick read. And gorgeous. So really, this book has it all going for it. That said, it's a first issue, but I'm definitely in for number two.
Brett?
All right. I liked it, but I didn't love it. I did enjoy the art, though I did find the you know, I've seen that Frank Miller-esque style before, and while I do think it's pretty, sometimes it's just a little copycatish, but it still looks nice. The writing, it actually reminded me a lot of the Ed Brubaker series, just, you know, slightly updated with more, with a little more backstory to go through, but, so overall, I don't know that I'd carry on. Like, it didn't jump at me enough so that I would say that I must read this book, because I'm not reading a ton of new books, so it's probably going to be done with one, but I didn't dislike it. I liked it.
Mo, did you have a chance to read this one?
I did read this.
All right.
Doesn't mean I want to talk about it. That's, you know, it's a, this book is the, how would I put this? This book is exactly what people who think if they're going to do a cool martial arts superhero book for 2014, this is what they would spit out. This is a good action oriented martial arts superhero book for 2014. Crap Iron Fist book, mind you.
Haven't we established yet that Iron Fist sucks anyway, so...
No, we haven't. Don't make me come over there.
Oh, come on. A white guy fighting martial arts style. It is so cliched. It was cliched when it originally came out. It's cliched now. Let's get over it and just have some
fun. It's cliched in 1973, Chris. It really is. Really? Seriously? Oh, yeah. No, it isn't.
It was always a ripoff of Kung Fu.
It's because you had, as long as you got like John Saxon, you know, doing some Kung Fu from Enter the Dragon, then it's totally cliche, man.
It's slightly a little different.
The most original thing about Iron Fist is he's wearing booties. And that's not necessarily a good thing.
No, he's not. He's wearing little girl slippers. Thank you.
But he's got a nice big tattoo on his chest.
Yeah, he had a great look. Look, I mean, you know.
I love the character, but I have to admit,
really, you love the character? Then what did you think of this book? Because it certainly wasn't Iron Fist.
I'm in love with it, Chris. You say, haven't we established yet that Iron Fist sucks?
I have a fondness for him. I love the character, but he's not particularly original. That's all I'm saying.
This is a character.
He's a cliche. I love the cliche.
This is a character that is. It's one of those characters that it never quite succeeds. It's one of those characters that's not strong enough to carry its own book for any length of time, but also is popular enough with the creators and with a fan base that he continues to be a hang around teams and get other chances. He's Marvel's Booster Gold. And
although the difference is that he is way more broody than Booster Gold is.
Well, he is now. Yeah. He wasn't, say, I don't know, 20 years ago. And he was nothing like this.
I will accept your comparison as apt.
It's pretty apt.
But the difference is Booster Gold's character has always stayed generally fairly true to who he once was, whereas Marvel has now changed this character wildly in order to try and do a different take to make it mainstream and make it successful. And hey, good for it. I cheer for the character. I hope very much it finds a fan base. It's not my Iron Fist. I won't read this.
Halfway through reading, Mo stood up and yelled at the comic, "No! No!"
No, honestly, come on. He's so broody in the beginning. Here's the go back. I just did the sweet Christmas, a visual history of Luke Cage.
Iron Fist is having sex and having absolutely no facial reaction. That's great.
That's so Iron Fist. Please. That's so not who he is or what it was. It's so many other characters that already existed. We didn't need it to be this one. Really actually pretty weak writing.
When
you
he
think
and
about
Luke Cage
it,
were it's together, just an, Iron it's Fist just, never it's just, looked like that.
What was that?
When he and Luke Cage were together sexually.
When they slept together, he always had an expression on his face. No, the thing is, here's the thing.
Bring it. That's what we're going on.
Yeah, I just did, like I said, just
Misty, did. Or was he with Colleen?
He was with Misty.
Misty.
Was with... Colleen was just the best friend. Luke was with Harmony.
Poor Colleen was just, she was in the friend zone.
No, she dated, what was his name? Of the White Tiger, Richard Dragon or something like that was his name? I can't remember exactly what it was. He, bald guy, goatee, looked like Ollie back in the day.
I thought she had a thing with Jessica Drew.
No.
That could have happened much later. We got this gigantic gap of like 15 years of comics. That didn't read.
Well, here's the character, I mean, who Iron Fist, who was for like 6 years was dead. And when he was finally brought back, he was brought back in one of the worst stories ever made from John Byrne, and he returned him in Namor.
That ruled. So, they brought him back as a plant. It was awesome.
Awesome. If the idea of my dick being stuck in a meat grinder is awesome, because that's what this was to me.
Your dick or one's dick?
and are you sure you don't mean penis?
No, okay, look.
Please be on Marvel Unlimited.
Okay, so here's the thing. Here's the thing. Again, everybody shut up. I'm talking Iron Fist. And I didn't even want to do this, and you made me read this. I paid $4 for this. Look, what was I saying? Oh, yeah, Iron Fist. Look, yeah, I just did Sweet Christmas, a visual cheap plug, History of Luke Cage. And in doing so, I was going through and scanning a bunch of my old Luke Cage books and this different stuff and finding these different pictures and kind of chronicling his history visually, obviously, because it's a visual history of Luke Cage is what it is. And as I'm doing this, I accidentally find myself starting to read a bunch of these books. I didn't want to. I had other stuff to read and other stuff to do, but I couldn't help it. And they hold up so well, especially the last like 15 issues or whatever. The character of Iron Fist there holds up so great and is so different than anything now or anything that this is. Again, there's just no reason to do this. You could have told this story with Daredevil, but they've lightened Daredevil, so now I guess they decided to make Iron Fist like him. This is closer to what you think of as Daredevil, closer to what you think of even a Batman, but definitely not Danny Rand. And, just kind of... You know, it's good for some people who don't know. If you don't know who Iron Fist is or give a damn, go ahead and read this. You'll get a good martial arts superhero 2014 gritty comic book that everybody thinks is super cool, and this is what we're going for. But if you're looking for really good storytelling and characterization, or in anything that honors at all the Iron Fist character and legacy, take a pass.
All right. So now
I don't know if Green Kulots qualifies as legacy, but okay.
Right. What?
Culottes.
Let's not even go there, Chris. Let's wrap all this. Right.
What a culotte is?
It's short.
It's his little shorty pants.
He didn't have shorty pants. He never had shorty. He had long stretch pants. And there was an episode where he and Luke Cage go to. They're hired as bodyguard for somebody in a.
See,
in
I told
a,
you. So. What do
you... I'm sorry.
They're hired to bodyguard somebody for New Year's Eve. So they have tuxedos that are in the color and design of their suits. That's like issue like 93 or something like that. It's freaking awesome. I was like, do I put it in visual history or not? It just looks too much like Luke Cage's. It was more Iron Fist suit that looked awesome as a tuxedo. But I'm like, but it's not the visual history of Iron Fist. It's the visual.
I tell you, I found out this week that the Marvel Essential line has been closed down. They're not doing any more Essential collections. And my first reaction was, I'm not going to get that third volume of Power Man and Iron Fist that finishes out the freaking run. That was the only thing I thought of. I won't miss any of the rest of it. really want that
last. I'm telling you, the final run by Jim Owsley, Christopher Priest, the Reverend Priest, whatever you want to call him, and MD Bright before they took over or created Quantum and Woody, that last run.
It's a great run. I started collecting that book at 121, not knowing it was coming to an end at 125. And immediately made a list of every issue from 1 through 120 on my checklist.
Nice.
Yeah, exactly.
I was a completionist for sure back then. All right, let's do some scripts.
Yes, that's a great idea.
What are we doing?
Where do we want to start?
All right, which ones are we doing?
I have brought... Well, why don't we start with the one I brought?
Okay.
I brought Sergeant Rock.
Oh, I can hardly wait for this one.
And I've marked the extract of the excerpt of the of this script. So I'll take the directions. Mo, are you up to a Arnold Schwarzenegger impression?
Absolutely.
All right. So you got the green lines.
Okay. Is it okay if my Schwarzenegger sounds a little like Stallone?
It's too late now. We're committed.
Okay.
All right. So you get the green lines, Mo.
Okay.
And let's go with Brett. You get blue.
All right. Is he Russian or is he just
He's we're gonna go with just American. It's
just American.
It seems to be an international like allies kind of team. It is an American team. There's a long explanation early on about Sergeant Rock moving from Austria to the United States.
Wow.
Having kept his accent, and then he joins up with the American army to go back and fight in. All right, so Brett, you
just
take
start the whole
Goral.
All right.
Yeah, well,
we're fine.
Brett, you take the blue line, Lieutenant Goyle.
Goral.
And then Chris, you get yellow, which is the other members of Easy Company. So this is Sergeant Rock.
Sorry, who gets red?
I get red. I'm taking the direction.
Oh, you're taking red. Okay. All right.
I want a whip snake. Oh,
so we've got this is Sergeant Rock. We're reading from the first draft dated August 1987. This was to be Arnold Schwarzenegger's film right after Predator. He had actually started some pre-production on it while he was doing Predator. Joel Silver was going to co-produce this with Schwarzenegger. Schwarzenegger is rumored to still be interested in doing this all these years later. Written by David Webb Peoples, who I didn't look up, but I know the name. And I love there's a note on the cover page of this script that says, note, Nazi rhymes with Potsy, and Nazi rhymes with Snazzy. And likewise, the plurals will be pronounced the same.
Awesome.
So the Nazis.
That means nothing.
Apparently, it was important in the way they're writing the dialogue. All right, let's go. The scene is moon, clouds, night. The clouds clear, the moon illuminating the night. Moonlight reveals retread as he looks upward. Listening intently, a very faint droning sound comes from above the cloud cover. Something crosses the moon, glimpsed briefly, the silhouette of a paratrooper. Then the clouds cover the moon and all is blackness again.
Aw, shit, Sarge. Sarge.
Rock and Goral are having an urgent conversation in the dark.
If he only saw one man.
Pump you up. Got it. We have two planes. That means at least two squads. It could be a whole company.
Then we're surrounded. Cut off. They're behind us.
The question is, do we proceed or do we stay put?
If we proceed, we'll run into them up there in the woods.
And they'll be having the advantage. They're hunting us. We've got a wounded man. I don't know what accent that's becoming.
It's a great homage to the Ultimate Warrior, actually.
Rest in peace.
Oh, crap. If we stay, we've got a solid defensive position. They'll have a tough time getting at us, but...
But we'll be stuck here in the morning, probably pinned down.
Between the devil and the deep blue sea.
Between the rock and the hard place. There isn't any right answer, Lieutenant.
Man, I think you're Iron Sheik, but... but there's probably a wrong one.
I'm not gonna turn. I'm gonna second guess you no matter how it turns out.
We'll dig in. Position the men in twos. Take turns awake. Tell them to be very alert. It might not be mortars and machine guns. These could be commandos.
Right, sir.
Also... Rock, sorry.
Rock starts to move off. But Goryl. We're going with Goryl? G-O-R-Y-L. Anyone guess? Goryl stops him.
Also, Sergeant, send a man off on the flank about 50 yards.
Sir?
So he doesn't give our position away. I want him to yell a warning to Baker about the paratroopers. They may not have seen them.
Good idea, sir.
Whip Snasher.
Along the slope, minutes later, Whip Snake stands among the boulders and shouts at the top of his lungs. My wife's sleeping. I won't be shouting at the top of my lungs. Hey, Baker, this is easy. The degenerate, mindless pig Germans dropped an airborne company behind us. Watch your American ass. Watch. Bang, bang, ping, ping. Whipsnake breaks off as bullets pierce the night, singing off the rocks around him. Barely visible in the moonlight, Rock crouches with the others, listening as the shots cease and a sudden eerie silence begins.
Nothing. No acknowledgement.
They're not going to give our position away.
Arr!
Stupid squirrel!
Let's remind the listeners that Mo is only doing one character, you know?
That's my broad identity.
It's sort of a pirate hornswoggle, isn't it?
Scottish pirate.
Scottish. He's being like Iranian, you know? Like.
Oh, that's me. could be they fell back already. Got away.
Or maybe the paratroopers already got them. Cut their throats.
All right, knock it off. Split it up into twos. Take turns of watching. Stay alert.
We're fucked. You know that. Stuck here. We really got our tit in the ringer this.
That's enough of beef. Listen it up, all of you. A beef's arrived. We got a pile of shit. It's my fault. I got us into this because I thought we should back up Barker. And now I'm trying to do as many different voices as possible.
It didn't show. In the moonlight, hardened faces look solemnly at Rock, listening to his apology, but Rock's voice is suddenly a cold snarl. His eyes are closed.
Well, that's enough, laddies. This is a war. We're supposed to fight.
That's tough, ladies.
Ladies. Oh, lad. Well, then I wouldn't have done that accent.
They gasp at the word ladies.
Now those in line and Barker, they might have a little more ammo than us. They might have a bazooka, but there's about 10 of them and about 10 of us. They're just as beat us up as we are. They're just as tired, and they're not getting any more pussy than we are. In fact, a lot of krauts are pounding them a lot worse than us. And every time the crowds give those colored guys some shit, they colored guys dish out some shit out. They wrecked 3 tanks today. And they've held up a German colony more than 6 hours. You think they fell back? You think they're dead? Or do you think they got pissed off and they're all on their way to Berlin? Oh, ragged-ass 10 of them. Get stirred up by the fairy in his dick. Fuhrer in his... Not fury. Fuhrer. I feel like Chris. Fuhrer in his... By his dick.
I don't even know what you're reading anymore. Neither do you.
All right, then. Take your positions and let's hope we acquit ourselves half as good as those guys.
Before anyone can move, there's a popping sound from below in the pass. Peering over a boulder, Retread sees a bright flare hanging over the block pass, and German soldiers hastily dashing for cover.
I don't think the color guys left for Berlin yet, Sergeant.
Crack, crack, crack. The German soldiers are shot down. So the important moral of this story is that African-American soldiers can fight well. That was really what the whole point of the rest of the script is.
Oh, well, that's...
I think you're wrong. I think that the point of this is... The point of this is that he should not still be trying to make this.
No. That's this, the moral. This should not... This should be not made... Keith, you've read more of the script than any of us. Do any member of Easy Company actually make an appearance in this thing?
Very, very minor. Nothing recognizable.
Because I want Wild like Man, I want my Ice Cream Soldier. There's nobody here.
Yeah, it kind of feels like
Bulldozer isn't here.
Roadblock. Gun-Ho.
Totally. Sergeant Slaughter.
No. These guys sound more like. No, but I mean, Ice Cream Soldier, he was cool. I loved him.
It almost feels like a prequel, actually. Like, it feels like an origin story of Sergeant Rock, which no one has ever written and no one needed to.
Well, I'll tell you another thing that this illustrates is that Mo cannot do Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Not consistent.
Look, I can. I need time. I need to find the character. I can't just pull a character like that out of my rear. That
well,
takes work.
You did a good
not a,
job.
Not a professional like me. Not a perfectionist when it comes to this stuff.
All right. This has been Firelight Theater bringing you Sergeant Rock, a staged reading by what we will remind you is the dream team of We Talk Comics.
Yes, Sergeant Rock it is.
what do we got next?
Well, why don't we go on with the Crow 2037?
Yeah, I picked this one out, and sorry, you guys, you'll have to use the larger script there. I had some formatting problems.
All right.
We start on page 47, right at the bottom, and it's interior.
Woof, man. Dr. Macabro's Freakorama?
Yes. I was on it and I lost it just a second.
Sorry,
man.
Which
this
one is it, Chris? It's
the format on this thing is a nightmare.
It's the PDF we're opening here.
Yeah,
open the PDF. Don't. And we'll be starting at 47? Interior Dr. McCree. Sorry.
Correct. 47.
47. Yes.
47. Two-thirds of the way down the page. Is that where we're going to, or
yeah, I don't know. We're going to interior Dr. McCrebo's Freakorama dash same.
Okay.
Oh, okay. Interior Dr. Okay. Who's playing what, Chris?
So we got Dr. McCabro, Fats Basil.
Keith, since I enjoyed you so. Sorry.
Oh, go ahead.
So since I enjoyed Keith so greatly reading the stage instruction, I'm giving him that duty.
All right.
Just because I love the insanity of Dr. McAvoy, I'm keeping that for myself. Because it's strangely appropriate, I'm giving Mo Fats. And Basil
is Chris,
going
this
to
This is on an audio podcast.
That's
you can
not
see this.
Nice. terrible what they're teaching you up there in Lloydminster. Barely Canada anymore.
Yes. Now,
so I'm Fats.
Who's Brett?
I'm Basil.
Basil.
Or Basil.
Do you want to be Basil or Basil? I got to make a choice here.
I prefer Basil, actually.
All right. All right. We good to go? Everyone's in character?
I'm going to just set this up a little bit. As in all the scripts I seem to read, a great tragedy has befallen our hero, the Crow, Damien, who's not in the scene. It doesn't really matter. And then he immediately forgets, lives his life, and then lives and is then forced to take revenge on something he doesn't remember. It's really quite a strange thing. This is Rob Zombie at his earliest, really expressing his mere insanity of putting absolutely everything in every scene of a movie. This scene is happening in a sideshow circus fighting arena. The next scene after this goes straight to the witch's coven. So really there isn't a lot of downtime in this script. It doesn't make any sense. And you might wonder my reasoning for not picking a scene with Damien the Crow is he's not really in this film anymore. this script is still in development without the Crow property attached. It's called The Black Riders. I think that sets it up.
Well, honestly, I love the Dr. Macabro's Freakorama, home of the Beast War pit fights.
Yeah.
Awesome. All right. It's a dangerous...
Sounds like the bedroom.
So does this next part. It's a dangerous mixture of a circus sideshow and a Roman Coliseum. That's your... I would put that just on your business card, Mo.
And then the next line is perfect for Chris Duker.
Drunk patrons come for a bloody show, and they always get one. Challengers from all over come here to do battle against Dr. Macabro's army of genetic mutations in the savage sport of pit fighting.
I see how this fits the crow.
The atmosphere in the cramped arena is alive with excitement, from the ear-splitting volume of the distorted disco music to the blood-splattering action in the pit. Dr. Macabro is lowered from the ceiling to stop just above the pit. He's a strange sight, part man, part machine. His eyes scan the crowd from within the mangle of rusted metal, tubes, and wires. His electronic amplified voice blasts through the arena.
Enter my world, a world of biological blasphemy, a world of freaks, geeks, and godless wonders. I give you the muzzle jaw, the lonesome, the gasping, the Greg with crooked hands.
Angle on Basil and Fats pushing their way through the rowdy ringside crowd surrounding the pit.
What number they give you?
13!
Bloody unlucky 13. La Cert del Diablo. I don't like that cack one bit.
Whatever.
Oh, now who's getting cocky?
Let's hit the bar and scope out the competition.
As they head off, we see Captain Scrag and his two men move into the stand several rows behind them. Elsewhere in the bleachers, Dr. Hives also takes a seat.
The powdery fine ash of bone on bone. The crawlers, the killers, ready to test their skill. Out of the madness they come. Drawn to the arena for wreckers and the chasers, I whisper their shrill, Rico Ram.
The pit.
That's not an evil whisper, Chris. Let's try that again.
Rico Rams.
That's it.
Why would you whisper if you're talking to a crowd? That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, I know. I
this is evil? Duh.
And if they were like, man, he must be evil. What was that last part? A fight montage. Nice. Two huge brutes, one human and the other a half-ape, half-man mutant, hammer away on each other. The human brute swings his battle hammer and knocks the ape man out cold. The scorecard changes to 12. Back in the pit, four tiny zombie-like creatures circle their giant hunchback opponent. The tiny monsters grin, exposing jagged metal teeth. All at once, they leap onto the giant, digging fast into his flesh. The giant tries to throw them off, but their teeth find major arteries. Blood squirts out like a fire hose as he stumbles to his knees, then falls flat on his face, dead. The scoreboard changes to number 13.
I think we can stop there. This is how this script goes for the 120-some pages. It just goes on. I mean, there's midgets running around, half-naked women, and I can't find a coherent story here anywhere. It is just cool shit happening for no apparent reason.
So it's basically like every single Rob Zombie movie?
Yes, except I kind of like the later ones once he actually found his voice. But I kind of hope this gets made just because there's some scenes in here I'd like to see.
Look, okay.
I found a Damien line here on page 67. Silly boy, don't you remember? Your mother is dead, just like you.
Yes. Don't you remember? Let's give the crow amnesia just to make it hard.
Well, he's got lines on 51, too. Yep. In the witch's lair. Yep. And they're great. Die like the unholy maggot you are. You are nothing. You hear me? Nothing.
Look, I can tell you this has nothing at all to do with the crow. I had no idea what was going on, and I still want this made immediately. This is awesome. Make this movie, Hollywood, now.
Book it.
Book it.
Well, we can totally act in this one. We're available.
Look, dude, there's already a character called Fats, yo.
So there.
What do we got next?
Well, I think we got to do the Cameron Spider-Man next. Now, I'm actually right now, as we speak, color coding this so it'll make sense for people to read. So in the meantime, why don't you guys review Iron Fist?
Wait. I feel done with Iron Fist.
You know what the thing is? I was in the middle of buying other comics. I don't know if this has ever happened to you guys. I was on there. buying other comics on sale, and suddenly it like the sale changed in the middle. And when I went to go buy the books, it said there's something wrong with your order. And when I went back, the sale from the day before, which was Jeff Johns books for 99 cents, so I had like a lot of Aquaman, Hawkman, and this different stuff was now changed to My Little Pony. So I did not get the books that I wanted. Has that ever happened to anybody else?
I've never had that happen, no.
Oh, well, I was like, yeah. And normally I'd be really excited about My Little Pony too, because, well, I wouldn't be, but I have to admit it's good.
When you're trying to catch up on Aquaman. But
yeah, I was actually really interested in reading his Aquaman and for 99 cents. And so, yeah, I mean, I don't know if that's a common thing or like an issue that they have or what the hell, but.
Well, I did not get sales. Every night at 10 o'clock our time.
What's that?
Sales change over every night at 10 o'clock our time.
Which just blew. Cause I was on there for like a good hour placing orders and buying different stuff. And then it was all gone. And then the same thing happened to me. I still went back on later in the day and spent like $120 bucks still anyways, or $220 bucks or some ridiculous amount. So, yeah, I got a good tax return, folks.
Nice. Yeah. Mine will all be going into it'll be comic related. It'll be going into the Batman slot machine in Vegas.
Nice. Good for you.
Oh, man. Have you actually located one?
Oh yeah, I played one last time I was down. Yeah, it wasn't as cool. It looked fancier than it was. I actually prefer the Lord of the Rings one.
But aren't you going to do the first thing? Aren't you actually going to go to the Pinball Hall of Fame? Because who has time to play slots when you have the Pinball Hall of Fame, dude?
I have been there like six times. I've never been to the Pinball Hall of Fame.
Oh, it's the first thing I went to. It's about the only thing I went to.
And it's in our hotel now, man.
Where is
it?
They
switched it, yeah.
They moved it to the I want to say it's not the Romano, Riviera.
Oh, cool!
Right across the street, actually, from the Riviera now.
Oh, cool!
That's awesome. So I'm just going to get into the actual series now that we've.
I got colors, yeah.
Yeah, colors. Okay. Of course, everybody knows. Well, most people, I think, this is actually the reason we're doing this. Then we did this the first time. Is I was going through and I saw somebody had posted the scriptment that James Cameron created for Spider-Man, because it's quite controversial. And a lot of people complained about it. Because back in the day, in the early 90s, around the time he was doing Terminator, I think actually shortly after that came out, there was a lot of talk about him, James Cameron, doing Spider-Man. And a lot of people were very, very anxious for it, thought it was going to be awesome. And of course, there was litigation with the rights and with creators owning the – I believe it was that – a movie company owned the rights to it, and James Cameron owned the rights to, or was in an exclusive contract with a different production company or different studio who didn't own the rights to Spider-Man, but his contract stated he could not do another movie until he did Spider-Man. And so it just became this litigation mess. And for years, this thing was tied up. And of course, it never ended up happening. And so this is the scriptment that he wrote, and there is somebody who did some storyboards for this too. They turned this into another script, and they changed quite a bit of his script, taking only a little bit of characters, and he has a co-writing credit on one that came closer to being made. It was very much just a few basic concepts from him, though, a few basic things. But yeah, he has it's funny because he was obviously very passionate about this. But is this your Spider-Man? You be the judge. So we will go through. I'm gonna get. Who's gonna be my Peter? I think Brett. You're my Spider-Man, aren't you?
Sure, Spider-Man all the way. Ooh.
Okay, so you're in yellow.
I'll think young.
Okay. I'm gonna get anything in blue. I'll get. I'll read myself. Anything in green, I'll let Keith read. Chris, I'm going to let you do the voiceover and Mary Jane in pink.
Awesome. Yeah, I still don't have any colors, though.
Yeah, and
you just get everything that's not colored.
You get everything that's not colored in pink.
No, I think Chris means that he doesn't have the colored script yet, but he should.
Yes.
Stop or shut it down and then start it up again.
That's exactly what I'm doing as we speak.
Okay. And it might not be fair. Maybe I should just make Keith Keith, maybe we should make you because that's a lot of right reading. So you be pink. I'm not doing it.
All right. I do a smoking falsetto.
You're the female. You're the female.
Okay, so I'll be Mary Jane. I don't have colors, though. No,
Keith is going to be Mary Jane. You just read everything that looks then like, you know.
So I got pink and green? Okay.
Yeah, you got pink and green. Brett, you got yellow. I got blue. Chris, you got everything that's like stage direction.
All right. So I'm starting?
Yep. Yep.
All right. Peter's walking out of school with Mary Jane when they are ambushed by Flash. He starts to ridicule Peter, then threatens him. Peter just clenches his jaw and backs away. Peter does not believe in violence, and he has never thrown a punch in his life. It wouldn't occur to him. Through a row of bushes, he sees Flash grab Mary Jane by the arm and spin her around. They are arguing. Flash slaps her across the face. Peter is so enraged, his hands snap a 4-inch tree limb without him realizing it. Flash is walking to his car after gymnastics. It is dark. A figure drops silently down behind him. Flash spins and sees a guy in a black fishnet mask. Thinking it was a robbery, Flash swings, only to grab his own fist in pain. It was like hitting an oak. Peter holds Flash with one hand and snaps him hard.
How do you like it, huh?
He snaps him again, backhand. Then he cocks back his fist and blam. Punches Flash so hard he flies 10 feet. He picks him up, gets him in a painful arm lock, marches him to his beloved Porsche, and slams him brutally against it. He pounds Flash into the car until the jock collapses, semi-conscious. Peter then rips a signpost out of the ground and pounds the car into junk. Glass flies everywhere. Peter leans close to Flash and tells him to stay away from Mary Jane, or else. Cut to Peter running. He stops around the corner, out of sight. In the darkness, he stands panting. Looking down at his hands, he rubs his knuckles.
I wonder if every hero remembers their first punch. Well, I do. Maybe it was all the bullies over the years kicking the skinny kid around. All that stored up rage just came out so fast it was scary. For a split second, I just wanted to kill him. It's a good thing his car was there. I always hated that Porsche.
Peter is gasping, shaking with emotion. He feels like this strange power flow through him has unleashed demons. He is becoming something he doesn't recognize. He doesn't realize that these primal forces are all within us all. And the power, like the power of adulthood, gives us the possibility of acting on those dark urges.
But the scariest thing of all was belting that jock butthead felt so good.
Peter takes the subway to Manhattan, changes in a restroom. Soon Spider-Man is roaming the rooftops of the most dynamic city in the world. High rises of Manhattan become his domain. He swings across concrete and glass canyons, 40 feet above the street. With ease and grace, he becomes the kind of private, it becomes kind of a private odyssey where he can go anywhere and observe the entire spectrum of human behavior like a ghost. He sees businessmen, cops, hookers, secretaries, junkies, car thieves, millionaires, all jammed together in this concrete maze. He watches unnoticed through high-rise windows as a man screams at his children, as a beautiful woman works out, as a middle-aged man drinks himself into a stupor crying, as a young woman plays with his baby. A 17-year-old mind can't make much sense of it. Why some so much, others so little? Why there needs to be so much pain? Peter comes into his room through the window, in his street clothes at 2 a.m. He sits down on the bed and opens the door. Door opens from the hallway. Ben comes in, sits in a chair. He doesn't turn on the light.
I know I'm not very good at the father thing, Peter. You came into my life 20 years past my prime time, and I know you're wrestling with things now that I can't help you with much. I was your age once. I know it's hard to imagine. It was the most painful, confusing time of my whole life. I'm not going to pretend to have all of the answers for you, but I want you to know that we're here for you, May and I. You can talk to us. If you're having problems, we'll understand.
Peter watches his uncle fumble for words. He notices Ben's hands are shaking. He is touched. But how can he tell them what's going on in his head? Being a teenager in the 1990s is complex enough. Ben is obviously thinking drugs, sex, gangs. But the Spider-Man thing, it would be impossible to explain. He doesn't even understand it himself. But he does understand all the forces at work in his mind, conscious and subconscious. He thanks his uncle and tells him everything is okay. Ben leaves the room knowing he has failed. Peter unbuttons his shirt. Under it, it is the Spider-Man costume. He looks at the spider emblem drawn on his chest. He takes the mask out of his back pocket and holds it in his hand. His eyes seem to stare back at him.
Okay. Now, obviously, because this is a script mint, it's a lot more descriptive and less lines and less scenes. There are some scenes coming up, but you're kind of getting where James Cameron was going with this. If any of you saw the Canadian movie Ginger Snaps, it's a Canadian horror film, they made an allegory between the idea of the werewolves and puberty. And that's really what James Cameron is going for here, is an idea of puberty and the changes you go through there and the way it changes you both mentally and physically and turning into Spider-Man. So that's kind of his theme of all this. So we'll go into the next bit with Mary Jane and Peter. Mm. Or Spider-Man.
I like Speeder too.
I have Speeder. I like that.
They might have been able to be animated. We just changed the name to Speeder.
Yeah.
By the way, Keith, I was supposed to be everything in blue. But you did a fine job, so I decided not to interrupt you.
I thought I had had green, right?
Green and pink.
Well,
you
left so much, there's so much freaking text here that I forgot about it.
You're still green and pink. Makes you feel any better. We're going to get more words coming up here.
I thought I did a great Uncle Ben, though.
You did. You were so good, I wasn't going to tell you.
I had never pictured Uncle Ben with a learning disability before, but now I have.
I thought your Uncle Ben sounded surprisingly like Bing Crosby. I was pretty impressed.
I was really hoping for a John Schneider Uncle Ben, but...
I was trying for more of a it was classic film is what I was going for. Jimmy Stewart is more of a, Jimmy Stewart in It's a Wonderful Life was kind of where I was going, but I'll take Bing Crosby. That's okay too.
That's pretty good.
Mary Jane goes alone to her.
Mo, do you want to Mary Jane?
Nope. You're the falsetto.
Yeah, that's right. You've claimed it.
Nice.
I'll be the guy in blue. He only has a couple lines.
Any more lines?
Mary Jane goes alone to her private spot. She is sitting, thinking. When she hears something behind her, she turns as Spider-Man drops down down to her and gasps. Startled by his sudden presence, she feels a rush of excitement as he offers his hand to help her up.
You're so trustful. I think you have to do it with the mask on.
Yes, first time ever the stunt man said a completely funny stick, and it's awful. Thank you.
Do you still?
Would you like a retake on that?
No, thanks. You don't have to carry on. Do you still trust me?
He answers. Her answer is a kiss, sweet and soulful. Their lips separated by a sheer fabric of the mask. She can feel his breath on her face.
Where are we going?
It's a surprise.
Brett, you're going to have to get real sensual talking to Keith in a little bit here.
I'm prepared.
Cut to the Brooklyn Bridge. A stunning aerial shot. A teeny shape swinging in the arc, racing past the support cables, sweeps toward us. It is Spidey, with MJ in his arms. He shoots another web strand, swings to one from the stone towers, and races up the side. She is light as a feather in his arms. She screams like a child riding Colossus in fear and excitement.
I kind of hope they mean the roller coaster and not the X-Men character.
I was thinking,
Brett needs to drop in the music from Margot Kidder doing that poem from Superman in here, and that, you know, love theme of when he took her to the North Pole. Anyways, go ahead.
They pass us. Her screams continue fading as he carries her up the dizzying heights above us. On the tower of the bridge, on top of the bridge tower, hold a beat. We hear screams approaching. Spidey appears and sets her down.
You don't have to say terra firma. He didn't have to write terra firma.
That is very pretentious, man.
It's James Spidey freaking Cameron.
Spidey appears and sets her on terra firma. She clings to him, looking down around in wonder. He has put the world at her feet. She can't believe this is happening to her.
If they're on a bridge, it's not terra firma at all anyway.
That's true.
I know, I'm stupid.
They're on a damn bridge. Sorry.
Well, anybody who's reading this can tell he has no idea how to spell, or no idea, go ahead.
In a dizzying down angle, we see how the suspension cables all meet radially.
I have no idea what word that is. It apparently exists, though, because it's not spelled wrong.
Nope.
Radially,
but it doesn't make sense in this context.
Well, sure, sure it does. It means that they meet at the top in the circle.
They all meet radiantly at the top of the tower. Yeah, I guess.
Radially.
As if they were
radiant. One more time with feeling, Chris.
But if there was sunlight, then perhaps they could meet radiantly at the top of the tower as well.
Yes.
That would be cooler.
Like the treads of some vast spider web.
Oh, I see. Yeah, I get that now.
Peter and MJ seem to sit at the very center of the web, surrounded by the lights of the city, in a warm spring night. It is a warm spring night, and the moment is pure magic. She stands with her back against a girder, needing to feel something solid. Spider-Man stands before a perfect formed male silhouette, with a soothing, low voice.
Hit the sex music, Chris. Hit the Luther Vandross as we're doing this one.
Bom, bom, bom. Courtship among the spiders is highly ritualized. It varies from species to species. The male spider may circle the female or wave his front legs to signal that he is not prey.
Spider-Man moves in a hypnotic arc around her. he raises his hands in a dance-like movement, lowers them.
The female usually signals her willingness by an uncharacteristic passivity.
God, I wish we were a video podcast. You can see the Brett is actually doing hand motion, dance-like hand motion.
I gotta get into character.
Gotta, that's method.
MJ takes a deep breath. Her lip trembles. Her knees are weak. Her eyes, though, are steady, gazing at the silhouette before her. She doesn't move of speak. She doesn't move of speak. Or speak would make more sense.
A lot more.
He moves closer.
In certain crab spiders, such as Xysticus, the male will attach strands of silk to the female, tying her limbs.
Spider-Man moves his hand gracefully across her, and she sees the sheerest silk webbing glinting in the moonlight. First one wrist, then the other. Hypnotic movement in the moonlight. Her arms are bound to the wall. Her breathing gets more rapid.
Since the female can break free at any time, the bonds have only symbolic significance.
The male must be very bold to take such liberties with the predatory female.
Yes, he is bold, but he must also trust her. Close your eyes.
He removes his mask and kisses her. Their mouths slowly and very sensuously devour each other. Peter and MJ are locked together. He is mesmerizing, gentle, powerful. He pushes up her skirt. They make love high above the world. She doesn't look.
Yeah, so this is the scene where James Cameron had Spider-Man and MJ have bondage sex in public on the top of a bridge. End scene.
You know, for kids.
Isn't that Amazing Spider-Man issue 86 and 87? Come on.
Oh, yeah. All right, we're going to get to the next bit. Keith will play green and pink here. I'll play blue. And Brett will be Peter. But the important thing to remember here they have Strand. Strand is Electro, except for that he's not Electro, because Electro is something Dylan. I can't remember his first. Max Dylan and Zodor.
Yep. Max Dylan, yep.
Yeah, Max Dylan. This guy is a super. He's got the powers of Electro, but the personality of Luther, rich businessman type, and uses his power of electricity to transfer funds. Like, you know, he'll take like 5 cents from everybody's bank accounts, so little they don't notice. But if he does it across the entire world, he'll be like a billionaire, right? Things like that. And he's trying to – he sees Peter. He figures out who he is and all this stuff. And he sees him as somebody like him. And because he's bored, he wants to turn Peter also into a villain and accept the money and go to the dark side of the force, basically, so that he can because, number one, out of boredom – number two, to have somebody he can kind of bond with some similarities in being a freak, and number three, simply because then they are powerful enough to really take over the world, for even more so than he has. So this is the Strand Electro character.
I really hope they were talking to Richard Pryor for the Strand character.
Oh yeah, well, I mean, hey, if Jamie Foxx can be Electro, go ahead, Keith.
Oh, talk about prepare. I want this to work out. You're a smart kid. Like those phony bracelets. That was a good idea.
What are you talking about?
Strand pulls his hands on, puts his hands on Peter's shoulders.
Son, I know your secret. See, I had the web material left all over my living room analyzed. It's real spider silk.
He grabs Peter's wrists and rips off the fake wrist shooters. Looks closely at his wrists. Bends the hand back, forcing the spinneret to poke out a little. Mary Jane looks a little shocked at the one. Peter sees the fear in her eyes, and his will seems to collapse. He sees the everything she feels for him change in a second. It's true. He's a freak. He's no longer human.
You can take off the costume, but you'll always be the Spider-Man.
It's just Spider-Man.
The point is, you are not a hero. You are a spider. It's something you don't have a choice in. Spiders are predators. They kill to live. They kill to live. They're not hampered by humanitarian ideals or impeded in their lethal efficiency by delusions of morality. They are pure, powerful, as God made them. There are no merciful spiders. There are no vegetarian spiders. It is now time for you to face and accept your true nature.
Strand turns again to the window, this time putting his arm around Peter's shoulders. Father and son staring down at the world they can own.
Join me. Together we can shake this two-bit planet down to its last nickel. Take what is rightfully yours. You have been given a great gift for a reason. Do not squander it.
Peter stares out at the vista for a long time. It all makes so much sense, and it seems to explain so much of what he feels. All this churning confusion. Strand gestures to Boyle, who walks to a shape in the shadowy nearby. It is about the size of two refrigerators and is covered with a tarp. Boyle pulls back the tarp.
Boyd. I don't know of all the things you've mispronounced why that's the one that got me, Chris.
Boyd pulls back the tarp to reveal money neatly stacked, bank slips, piles of hundreds 6 feet tall by 8 feet long. Mary Jane gasps.
Of course I seldom carry cash, but I have Boyd bring this for demonstration purposes.
Boyle. Sorry.
Much more dramatic than a bank statement, wouldn't you say?
How much is it?
It's about... what is it? Beauregard?
250,000?
Million, dear girl, million. That's all I had lying around on such short notice. Of course, it's chump change compared to what you and I could do together. It's out there. All we have to do is take it. You know how I get this? It's half a cent here, half a cent there. Electronic transactions taking place a million times a second all over the world. And nobody misses it. That's the beauty. It's almost like this is the exact plot of Superman 3 that was made 6 years before this. Sorry, I fell out of my accent.
Yeah, because you're doing Mitch Hedberg. Are you familiar with Mitch Hedberg, the comedian?
I kind of been settling into more of a House of Cards. It was Kevin Spacey in House of Cards is where I was kind of going there. Later
more
on.
More like Mitch Hedberg. Google.
Okay. I know Mitch Hedberg.
YouTube.
Because yeah. Okay. You started, though, doing your agent from the last Spider-Man.
Yeah. which was my go-to.
It's like my Sergeant Rock.
Yeah. Hello.
as I developed, I'm more Sci-Fi and Spacey. But I'm okay with Mitch Hedberg, too. It was genius.
It was.
You know, I took some money once. It was easy. It was just sitting there. It was the solution to all my problems, and there was nobody to stop me. Nobody could touch me, so I took it. And you know what I found out?
What, son?
That there is a line you don't cross, and that sometimes you only find the line by tripping over it the first time you cross it. But once you do, you always know right where it is.
Oh, please. Next you're gonna tell me you gave the money back.
More or less.
That is a disappointment.
Listen, you want to talk about fate? Maybe there is a reason for all this. Maybe I was put here to stop guys like you when nobody else has the balls.
Pretty tough for a guy in a dance skin.
Strand moves without warning, grabbing Mary Jane before Peter can pull her away. She feels the current running through her. Peter lurches forward and Strand turns up the juice. Mary Jane cries out. Peter stops. He can only watch helplessly as Strand toys with her life. Strand grabs her head and kisses her. The voltage makes her hair shoot straight out. She starts doing the Watusi.
Typical, isn't it? Isn't that usually what we would think of the Watusi?
See how power turns women on.
He breaks the kiss. He slaps the shit out of her, out of him, and he...
She slaps the shit out of him.
She slaps the shit out of him, and he kisses her again.
This Boy. Time...
Oh, my God.
She slaps the shit out of him, and he kisses her again. This time at much higher voltage. MJ starts to convulse wildly. Meanwhile, Sandman has... Sandman?
Which is Boyle, by the way.
Or Boyle, or Borga.
Meanwhile, Sandman...
Billy is Sandman, I should mention.
Beauregard, you're getting yourself followed over the carpet. How much more of this is there?
A few pages.
Anyway, Sandman has dissolved, Chris.
Yes. Meanwhile, Sandman has dissolved and is flowing across the floor. He reforms behind Peter and grabs him in a grip of a solid rock. Peter struggles as Strand electrocutes MJ. She bucks and goes still. Her head falls back, and Peter sees her staring eyes, pupils fixed, and dilated, dead as they come. Peter can only stare in horror.
What should we do? Call 911.
I'll kill you, motherfucker! You hear me? You're dead, you sick bastard!
See, that's my point exactly. You are a killer, kid. You've got it in you. Why don't you accept it? You want to rip my throat out right now.
Strand puts his hand on Mary Jane's sternum and zaps her with a vibrating pulse. She arcs, then relaxes. Her chest starts to move. She opens her eyes, weakly seeing Strand looking down at her.
I think there's a real electricity between us, don't you?
Peter goes berserk. He fires webs at MJ, jerking her out of Strand's arms before he can react. Then, mustering all his force, he explodes the Sandman into loose chunks, which rain down around the room. He drives out of Strand's first bolt of lightning, which sets a wall of fire. Peter tackles MJ and scoops her up, diving right towards the glass a quarter mile up. Her screams vanish on the wind. Her scream vanishes on the wind. Sandman chunks dissolve into puddles of sand and quickly flow together, forming back into human shape. Strand, in a fury, runs into the room, looking down. No sign of Spider-Man. Looking up, he catches a glimpse of a figure leaping from one tower to the next, carrying MJ to safety. He fires a lightning bolt, which sears the night. It explodes glass of the north tower. On the roof of the tower, Spider-Man gets MJ to the stairwell. He rips off its hinges and he tells her to run. She starts down, then turns back to him.
I love you.
So, as you can see, his Peter Parker beats the hell out of, almost kills people like Flash. Flash is a woman beater. They make love in public with bondage scenes. His Peter Parker drops F-bombs. Another day at the office for James Cameron. I have the feeling this would have been like the greatest superhero movie if it was any character besides Spider-Man, because this is that Iron Fist was closer to Iron Fist than this is to actual Spider-Man. Like, I don't know. He took some basic concepts and changed everything, and I don't get that. Thank God this thing didn't get made, especially since everybody was so anxious for it back in the day, thinking how great it would be. And, of course, you see certain things there, and like the sand being forming into liquid puddles and reforming, and you're like, oh, that sounds like T-1000. Any thoughts, guys?
I like the foul language. I would say that knowing how many comic book movies there were at this time, we all would have been there three or four times that first week because we were determined to support every comic book movie that came out, hoping that there would be more, not knowing that it would be part of the destruction of the very industry that we love.
All right. Speaking of which, Nick Cage, Superman, Brett.
Oh, yes. Yes. The destruction of all things that we love. So I've marked a whole bunch of pages. Now, I'm going to try to keep this in a more, quick scene basis. So what I am going to do to start out is just read some of the descriptions, because I think that they're all a little funny in some cases. So we do start off, like most movies on Krypton, with the destruction of Krypton.
You mean most Superman movies? You think all movies in general take place?
Yes.
Start with the destruction of Krypton. Yeah, yes. Pretty much.
Okay, I'm with you.
That's the universal logo, not Krypton.
Okay.
This is actually a lot like.
That took me a second, Chris. That's all.
This is a lot like Man of Steel, only you just need to replace Zod with Brainiac right off the bat. And there's a bodyguard who is going to who is attempting to save Superman.
Wait, is he this character called Chief Bodyguard?
Yes, he is.
Oh, very interesting.
I know.
You should mention that when we say Nick Cage. This was Nick Cage was attached to the product with Tim Burton directing. That was the Kevin Smith script. Then he left the products. The Smith script got thrown aside. There was like three or four more drafts, and they decided that the most momentum that the studios had was back when they had Nick Cage attached and people seemed to be anxious. So in order to get him back in the fold, he gave very descriptive notes of what he wanted in the script. So while it's not his name, the actual writer, it's virtually his script. It's all his ideas and his concepts, basically. This is the Nick Cage. This is Nick Cage Superman if he was unfiltered, essentially.
And I think it's kind of obvious as we go through this just how much he thinks of himself. And also, it seems to be, because there's the whole, Superman in the 90s element where so many of these different elements were introduced. And he's trying to get all of them in, from Brainiac to Doomsday to the Death to the Return to,
and 90-minute film.
And Lex Luthor. Maybe. And two and a half hours, probably. But,
well, it's only 116 pages.
Yeah, that's right. But you need more of Nick Cage just looking like Nick Cage.
I get to play Nick Cage, by the way. I'm calling it. Come on. How am I not in that? That's my Nick Cage right there.
That's not bad.
Thank you.
You just have to maintain that for more than three lines.
Well, that's hard.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I don't think you'll be able to. All right. So, this is the description of what Brainiac looks like. Flashing liquids and matter swirl within, oozing, storming, forming something. A creature. The capsule shatters, disintegrating in a flash. The thing within rises. Two arms, two legs, a massive head, a man, sort of. More of a demon, green skin, feral eyes. Brainiac made flesh. So he already doesn't sound like Brainiac to me.
But awesome.
All right. I noted the... where are we here?
I don't know, what page do we go to here?
Let's see, page 9 for Lois Lane description. A beautiful woman poured into a black dress glides into view. Her young eyes sparkle with intelligence and spirit. I want her, so do you, so does everyone. She's Lois Lane.
I love it.
A young man moves toward her. Cameras draped around his neck. Jimmy Olsen, 20s, skinny, jangly, very cutting edge, wearing the wildest suit you've ever seen, and a press pass. He busily stuffs a plate of hors d'oeuvres into his mouth. Yes, Lois glances at her watch annoyed. All right, and now the Superman or Lex Luthor description on page 11. Lex Luthor paces in his tuxedo, furious, frustrated. He's a rich, ruthless, conceited mogul who fancies himself a genius and a tough guy. He's what might happen if Donald Trump and Bill Gates had a foul-tempered child. And finally, Superman on page 13. Superman, handsome, hard, black hair flowing in the wind. Muscles sharply etched under a suit of midnight blue. A great crimson cape billows out behind him. A golden S shield shines on his chest. He sternly takes in the scene below. See, don't you just picture Nick Cage in that case?
That's all I can see. Yeah.
All right, so on page 28, we have a scene of Lois and Clark. And that's actually, in this case, that would be the not the PDF pages, but the actual...
the mark pages. So yes. Interior Mount Rushmore Night?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, so I know I'm Clark.
All right. And Keith, you do such a good job as Lois. And
no, he can't repeat that voice, though. He has to come up with a different one.
Oh, okay.
I've only got the one falsetto voice.
Yeah, I think we're going to have Chris play that role.
All right, Chris, you're Lois. And then Keith, well, why don't you just do the rest of it?
All right. On top of Jefferson's head, looking out and down on Washington to the right, Roosevelt and Lincoln to our left. I really want to check the details on this one. A breathtaking vista is spread out beyond. The remains of a picnic dinner rest on a blanket. A small campfire glows before it. Superman and Lois lie together beside the fire, naked, wrapped warmly in his crimson cape.
You are right. It's a beautiful view. The stars look so close.
Dude, I'm so turned on right now.
I'm now imagining that Clark is Nicolas Cage and Lois is one of the guys in the hall.
All right. I can hear them.
Lois looks at him, surprised.
What do they sound like?
Like they're singing. And I hear the birds in their nets across the valley. And the wolves moving in the hills.
Wolves?
Clark smiles.
They're not close. And your heart beating, that's my favorite.
It must be strange being you.
I'm different. Being with you makes it all right.
Lois turns and looks at him, kisses him softly.
Is it always going to be like this? Grabbing a few hours when we can, trying to make the most of them. It's been 2 years, Clark. I want to get married.
Shh. Clark turns away. Not this again.
We talked about that.
Have children, like normal people.
Clark sits up, naked in the moonlight, troubled. Lois pulls the cape around her. Stare. This is dirty.
Do we get to see Superman's junk?
I think he just did. But in the moonlight, that's what that shot was right there.
Might as well. Are we going to continue with this, Brett, or are we on the next page here? Or
Nope, we have to carry on to the next page, yes.
All right.
Okay. I'm not normal. I'm not even human. My parents found me in a crater.
Yes, and raised you. And taught you right from wrong. They made you human. Make you the man that I love.
Clark turns, looks at him. Torment.
Lois, I don't know who I am. I don't even know what I am.
I don't care, damn it.
Even if we could make a child, how do you know it could live inside you? How do you know having it wouldn't kill you?
I'll take that chance.
I can't. Every morning, I ask myself the same question. To what purpose? For what reason
Why was I sent here? I don't know.
Maybe you're doing it already. Clark, maybe you're already doing it.
Clark shakes his head now.
I'm doing what I do because I can. But that's not an answer. I can feel what isn't there. It aches in me until I know I can't marry you.
Lois just stares at him deeply.
Is what we have so awful?
No, it's wonderful. It's not just... It's just not enough.
Superman looks into her eyes, silent, dying inside.
I don't think we should see each other for a while. Please take me home.
There was a beat there, Chris. Where was the beat?
This is heartbreaking. He had something in his eye. That's what happened there.
So after this, there is a good scene of Clark getting drunk, but you know, we'll move past that one. And then
like a Superman movie about Clark getting drunk.
That's right.
Just how much alcohol would Superman have to drink?
Well, a lot, because he interacts with Jimmy during it, so it's kind of amusing.
If Wolverine can't get drunk, I imagine it would take an awful lot to get a Superman drunk.
I really don't think Kryptonian powers would do anything to negate the effects of alcohol. It's not
what are you insane? Of course they would.
No, alcohol would have the same effect on his brain.
At least in the comics, at least back when Byrne did them, he didn't even need to eat. He just did it because he liked the taste of food.
Yeah, but that still doesn't... I mean, he would still ingest stuff, and it would digest.
Where do you guys weigh on this? And then we'll quickly move on. Alcohol affect Lois or Superman or not?
No.
Keith?
Enter the bloodstream just the same?
I'm gonna vote no.
No.
I think for like 10 seconds or like 10 minutes and then it's through, you know.
Not even that.
Well, I mean, essentially alcohol dilutes your blood and poisons you in a way.
Well, that's actually what I was going to say is, say you gave Superman, I don't know, poison. Say you gave him a big old cup, Chris, there of
pile of arsenic.
Venom from a black cobra. You know, black cobra. You think that would kill Superman? No.
I don't know if drinking venom would harm anybody. I don't know how that works. I mean, venom, the way it works is injected into your bloodstream.
Any poison that would kill me. If Superman had to kill him.
I would go to Twitter right now, but I don't want to ask, would venom kill Superman? Because it's not the discussion I want to get into.
That's for
well,
sure.
Well, especially since people would definitely take that into a different place.
Yes.
I don't know. I've ever read a story where Superman got poisoned. I don't know. I'm just saying. I don't think we've ever established any sort of Kryptonian immunity to human poisons.
This is the dumbest thing you've ever said, Chris. Well,
Crisis where he has 10,000 powers. He has a limited amount of powers.
No, please. He could lift mountain. He could move the moon if he wanted to. He can turn the Earth back in time by spinning the opposite direction.
No, he can't. Damn it, no, he can't.
That was pre-crisis.
All right, Brett. Before we just, we got to wrap this up some year. Where are we going?
All right. Well. Needless to say, Brainiac has come to Earth to look for Superman. So he has taken over Lex Luthor now, you know, and partnered with him. Now Lex Luthor in this case is you know, kind of a goofy character. He's a little more Gene Hackman than he is anybody else doing that. But we're going to move. So anyways, Brainiac also brings out his secret weapon, Doomsday. Doomsday kills Superman, unsurprisingly. And so now we're going to go to 94, where we'll just do a little short...
Give a jump.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, there's a lot of randomly awesome, awful stuff throughout the whole script.
Okay. What are we doing here?
94. All right. Well, 94, really, the only thing we need is wicked, black, shiny, like a samurai spaceman. Superman holds the crystal sword in his hands.
Samurai Spaceman is my favorite CD from the 1990s.
I like Superman with a crystal sword.
Matthew Sweet's Samurai Spaceman. Right now.
A protective helm curves up and forward from his neck, but his face is clear to see. He glares, angry. See, because what happened here for him to come back is that the bodyguard from Krypton had survived, came and put Superman into a chamber to bring him back to life, and Lois was there to help as well. So, and then afterwards, Superman didn't have his powers, so he needed the armor. The samurai spaceman armor with the crystal sword.
Ah, lay down your weapons. Walk away, and you can live. My fight's not with you. I just know that the enemies here are called the Lexmen.
Yes, that's right.
That's awesome.
All right, and now we're going to jump to a Lex and Kitty scene on 106. Now, Kitty is just the standard female that Lex always seems to be saddled with. But
a chess mocker?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
So, okay, so 105, we'll just do 105 Interior LexCorp Laboratory. I'll do Luther then, and Mo, stop eating, or be Kitty. You get to do the female this time.
Nice.
And Keith, you want to do the screen?
All right. Lex tumbles as the lycroped leaps after him.
As the made-up word.
Okay, and Leceropod leaps after him, scrambling away on his backside, terrified, screaming. The snapping jaws lunge toward him.
Get away from me!
Lex runs out of floor. He backs into a wall. The Leceropod rises on its haunches, snarling, prepares to leap in for the kill when Kitty, horrified, desperately looks for a weapon. Her eyes settle on a kryptonite titanium cylinder. She grabs it, wrenches it from its base. The power beam instantly dissolves as Kitty swings the heavy cylinder like a club.
Stop eating my Lexi!
Cylinder smashes down on the beast's head again and again and again until Leceropod slumps to the floor. Still, Kitty drops the cylinder, cradles Lex.
Lexi, are you okay?
Lex shakes himself back to his senses, tries to get up.
Must stop cylinder.
I did that, honey. You just rest. Everything's okay.
So this is just one of those perfect examples of Lex being, you know, completely useless and Kitty actually being way more use. And now, the rest of the script, pretty much, is Superman versus Brainiac fight scene. Right. So, almost all of it is good. But we'll go to 107 and just do a little bit of that. All right, so Mo, you can be Superman.
I know.
Chris, you can be Mal R. I'll do the screen direction, and we'll give Keith Lois this time.
Awesome.
The Superman suit and tatters over him. Brainiac seizes victory, swings his sword. Brainiac gets a sword, too.
Why wouldn't he, really? Only fair.
That's what everybody's been... You know what? If they just made Superman a little more like Lord of the Rings, it would be a big hit.
I'm just trying to picture the
this
meeting.
This is actually prior to Lord of the Rings, wouldn't it be?
Oh, yeah, way prior.
Oh, yeah.
2002, I think, or 2000?
2000.
So about the same, yeah. Anyways.
Superman looks into Lois' eyes, preparing to die again. The kryptonite swords slices through the air. Mal-R is suddenly there, diving in front of Superman. The kryptonite blade sinks deep in his belly. Brainiac stares into Mal-R's eyes, shocked. Begins to pull the blade back out. Mal-R grabs it, holds it in place. Brainiac can't retrieve it. Mal-R smiles as he snaps the blade, sinks to his knees. Brainiac stares oddly at the useless hilt, drops it. Superman gapes, stunned, kneels beside Mal-R.
Why?
My life is nothing as I told you. you have steel, you have the steel of your father and your heart of your mother. End this hate in your soul.
Malar closes his eyes and dies. Superman gazes down at his face, then slowly rises, lips toward Brainiac.
You're not less than nothing. A disease that only living things can. One day we'll cure ourselves of you.
Brainiac glares at him, then glances hard at Lois, swiftly turns, grabs her, pulls her to the building's edge.
Let go! No, no!
Lois struggles, but Brainiac is much stronger. Brainiac lifts her into the air with one arm, dangles her over the side. Lois gapes down at the street, terrified. The sidewalk beckons 100 stories below. Superman quickly limps toward the side too, yards away, too far away to stop him.
No!
Brainiac nods yes. Oh, we don't have a Brainiac, do we?
Before I kill you, I want to watch you lose everything.
Please!
Lois looks over at Superman, calming herself, preparing. Their eyes meet. Superman sees his whole life in hers.
I'm not afraid.
All right, now we'll skip ahead.
Wait, I'm just gonna... I haven't read any further, but does Superman have to break Brainiac's neck to get him to stop killing humans? Just, you know, throwing it out there.
All right, so page 110. And this is, all right, so, Chris, you can be the Skull Ship. Keith, you can be Brainiac. Yes, yes, it does. And I'll do the introduction again.
That's crazy.
Superman pins him with a stern gaze.
I was wrong. You have to kill me more than twice.
Brainiac turns, furious, wrenches a pipe from the blacked energy beam tower, clutches it like a jagged lance, whirls back, preparing for battle, but Superman isn't there. Brainiac turns, confused. A fist smashes at his face. He goes flying. The pipe clatters useless to the roof. Superman picks him up, flings him at a wall. Smack. Brainiac slides down, dazed. Superman picks him up, starting beating him.
I don't like you. I don't like what you did to my parents. What you did to their world. What you did to my friends. Especially what you did to me.
Superman flings Brainiac across the rooftop. Crash, he hits the ground hard. Bleeding, beaten, finished. Brainiac watches Superman stalk toward it. To end it, he touches the communicator on his tunic. We hear the voice of the Skull Ship.
Yes, my lord.
Do you love me?
The Earth looms very close through the skull's sockets. The holograph shows Brainiac dying on the roof.
I do.
Will you die with me?
I will. I am coming.
All right, and we'll wrap this up by going to page 115, where what happens is...
So something happens after that?
Yes.
That's where you end the movie, because you don't top that.
When the Skull Ship says, I'm coming, that is the end of the movie. Yeah.
That is the end of the movie.
Well, no, Malar has told Superman of the Kryptonian survivors.
Wait, didn't Malar die 4 seasons back?
Well, sure, but he has told him about this previously.
That's no reason not to tell him things.
Yes. So he has told him about the Kryptonian survivor. So Superman has realized that he has a duty. All right, so actually we'll go to page 114. All right, I suppose I can be Lois then. Keith, you can read the direction, and Clark, Mo, you can be Clark.
Lois and Clark watch the sun rise over the city.
What happens now?
Clark shrugs, thinking. Glances skyward.
Wait, where am I?
114 middle, Clark.
Middle, Clark?
I think you'll like it here.
No.
It's up
no? There. Like, not that down front? Oh, wait a second. Clark shrugs, thinking, glances skyward. Sorry.
There are people out there waiting for me, Lois. My people. They need me. I have to find them.
You have people here, too.
Clark, no.
I know.
You belong to two worlds, Clark. You're going to have to choose.
Clark? Why that's too sensitive?
I don't know. I have.
Smile.
I know. I'm going with you.
Clark looks under surprise.
So I'm leaving?
Lois nods with certainty.
I know you, and I already lost you once. That was enough.
How do you know you're invited?
Lois stops, smiles, puts her hand around him, kisses him.
Try and stop me.
Oh, my lord.
Clark smiles back. Hold on them. Fade out. Roll credits of all those people who would have.
They should have stopped at the skull ship saying, I'm coming.
See, and that's why I had to do it. So Superman,
that was the natural one.
Superman leaves Earth to go off with Lois to support his Kryptonian brethren.
I like the implication that he wasn't going to go, and Lois talked him into leaving.
Yes.
That's what I like.
Wow. This would have been nuts. You know what I've noticed in all these scripts is they really like to kick the characters that we know and love and make them have sex with
anybody.
Lots of they really. It's like the stars come up and go. This script's all right, but I'm not boning anybody. Who am I gonna bone in this one? Huh? Throw somebody in there. Jeez.
So yes, this script is awesome. Like I actually wound up marking several more sections that I could have brought up. But
you just wanted us to do the whole script, didn't you?
It got to a point where I actually was laughing enough that I could have had us do the whole script. Yes, because it is so Nick Cage.
Maybe at another point we actually will, because I mean there will be a Scriptman's 3, because it is my favorite gimmick we have.
It is great fun.
I like when you added the sound effects to make it more like the graphic audio that DC does. I like that. All right, well, let's wrap this one up. We have run it. Thank you if you've continued listening all the way to this part of the episode.
You're bless a braver you. Man than I am.
Bless you. I'm going to guess that Reese and Paul Hicks are the only people still listening at this point. and it's just because Paul Hicks drives about 4 hours each way every day. this was Scriptman's 2. As we said at the top of the show, Ultimate Scriptman's. Thank you, Ultimate Scriptman's. Now, new Ultimate Scriptman's. Now, we are at the Calgary Expo on the Saturday, the 20 whatever that is, whatever the Saturday is, at 4:45 for We Talk Comics Live. Is April 26th. If you're listening to this after April 26th, please download the episode of We Talk Comics Live. It was great.
It is my favorite thing I enjoyed at the expo.
That's right.
Though I have to say there was another couple panels that I also thought were fantastic.
Well, definitely the panel that's on Sunday from 1 to 1:45 and the Palomino Room E. It's never been easier to get a comic together, but is it a route to a career or business? That panel with Alexander Finbow from Renegade Arts and Entertainment, Connor McCreary from Kill Shakespeare, and Greg Kamachuk of Alchemical Press.
Oh, and there's somebody else.
Yeah, that's right, me. Yay!
And yeah. I may or may not be hosting a panel entitled Fill in the Blank Here at Fill in the Time Here, also in the Fill in the Room Here.
Excellent. Perhaps
I'm just going to let Brett Ed.
I will not be hosting panels. I don't even have to host this crap anymore. I'm just OUT.
Say goodnight, Chris.
Good night, Chris.
Comics@WeTalkPodcast.com.
Yeah, like anyone made it here to get the email address. comics@WeTalkPodcast.com. If you actually made it here, Mo will send you something in the mail if you made it all the way to this.
That's right. All you have to do is there'll be a hint. You have to tell me that you made this far by saying a random word. Knowing what random word I said, at this point, if you can Twitter me this, you will get a prize. The word is penis.
Really upset my cat.